Good news travels afoot. Bad news rides a fast horse. The election results were quick to reach the frontier, and they held no surprises. By a strong majority, Texas voters had supported secession. The report brought cheers in Fort Belknap, but found a mixed reception in the Ranger camp. Though a rumor had spread quickly among the men, Captain Burmeister had called them into formation to make the announcement official.
Men, the news has come. The vote was as we have thought, for secession. Very soon the Texas legislature will meet. No longer will we stand under the flag of the United States.
If we ain't Americans anymore, what are we, Captain?
Burmeister stared at the ground. Rusty thought he saw tears in the captain's eyes.
That you must each decide. Almost 30 years now I have been an American. An American I will remain.
He turned and walked back to his tent without dismissing the formation. Sergeant Whitfield gravely watched him go.
All right, dismissed.
The following morning, Burmeister called the company into formation and turned the command over to Whitfield.
Until they send someone, you will be in charge. Perhaps they will send no one, and the company is yours if you want it.
The whole country's fixing to turn upside down. They may not want any Rangers at all. Where'll you go, Dutch?
Across the river. I will offer myself to the Federal Army. If they do not want me, perhaps Colorado. Texas, under a different flag, cannot be my home.
It won't be the same without you.
With or without me, it will not be the same again.
After shaking Whitfield's hand, Burmeister turned to the men who stood in loose formation.
May God be with us all.
Rusty had not been here long enough to know the captain beyond a modest surface acquaintance. Yet in a strange way, he felt he had known him always.
Red River, Fall, 1862.
Buffalo Caller did not understand why white men had gone to war against one another, but the reasons were of no importance. What mattered was that the Tabos were distracted by their own fight. Many white men had left the Texas settlements to join the war, leaving the countryside thinly defended. He hoped the white men's war would go on forever. Perhaps the people might regain the lost portions of Comancheria. It was a good time to take his own son, Jackrabbit, on his first horse raid. Ever since Whippoorwill had finally given him a boy, Buffalo Caller had been eager to teach him to be a warrior. But as his son was young, Buffalo Caller was growing older. Exertion that never used to bother him would set his heart to pounding. However, as his body slowed and gray invaded his once black hair, his mind gained wisdom. Beside him, another elder, Broken Leg, was beginning to feel the fatigue of their journey. Although they were close in age, Buffalo Caller had been apprehensive about letting him come along. Their third night of travel brought them to a valley where Buffalo Caller remembered that white farmers had plowed up much of the grass to grow corn and cotton, feed for their many horses.
This is the place. We will go to the end, then come back up the valley and gather all the horses and mules we can find.
Broken Leg had lagged much of the day, catching up only at nightfall when the others slowed their pace.
I remember this valley. Here we killed many buffalo.
A long time ago. Now there are no buffalo, only spotted cattle.
He looked up. The moon was in its brightest phase. They would need all of its light to see by as they swept the farms clean of their riding and draft stock. Past the last farm, where the valley flattened out into a long and gentle downward slope toward a distant river, he halted and reined his pony around.
Let us gather horses.
The warriors spread out in an irregular line and started back in the direction they had come. In a short time, they were pushing ahead of them more horses and mules than he could count on his fingers four times over, and much of the valley still lay ahead. This was going to be one of the greatest raids of his life. He put aside the pain which had invaded his joints. Exhilaration overwhelmed any feeling of fatigue. He looked for his son and was pleased to see Jackrabbit riding ahead of the other young men. His gaze sought out Broken Leg, who appeared as invigorated as Buffalo Caller felt. Perhaps it was right after all that he had brought his friend. They came to a farm where half a dozen horses and mules stood inside a closed pen. When one of the young men tried to open the gate, The burning of gunpowder lighted an open area between two sections of a cabin. Two of the young men rushed the riflemen with bows in their hands. Buffalo Caller rushed to the cabin. He saw Jackrabbit dragging live coals out of a fireplace and spreading them across the rough wood floor. Buffalo Caller quickly raked the coals back onto the hearth.
White men farther up the valley might see the fire. They would know we are coming.
I did not consider such a thing, Father.
You must learn to think, or you will not live to be an elder.
On the dog run, the other warrior held up the fallen rifleman's scalp for Buffalo Caller to see, along with the longer hair of the woman.
She was with child, so we have killed three.
You will have time later to show off your scalps. We are losing too much of the night.
They were within half a day of the river when a group of horsemen appeared without warning over a low hill and fanned out in challenge. Buffalo Caller had begun to hope he and his party would escape unscathed, but he saw that it was not to be. He stopped and counted the horsemen, who were as yet far beyond arrow range. They might simply be aroused citizens who sometimes fought bravely but usually not well. On the other hand, they might be rangers, better organized and savage in a fight, tenacious as hungry wolves. Several of the young warriors gathered around him, eager for combat. Buffalo Caller counted the white men a second time and knew they fell well short of the Comanches in number. He pointed to several of the warriors, including his son.
Put the horse herd into a run. The rest of us will stay behind and hold back the Texans.
But we want to kill more Texans.
We have traveled far and endured much for these horses. Do you want to lose them now?
No, Buffalo Caller.
He took a long look at the herd as it pulled away from the warriors. He could understand the young men's wish for glory. He had known it himself when he was their age. Now, he had gained glory enough over the years, and he had a high appreciation for the value of horses.
Let us make a quick fight of it, then, so we do not lose everything we came for.
The Comanches charged wildly toward the Texans. Buffalo Caller thought he saw confusion in the ranks of the whites. He hoped they would scatter and run. If they did, the fight would degenerate into a race, and death would come swiftly for those whites who rode slow horses. To his dismay, the white men stepped down from their saddles, dropped to their knees, and aimed their rifles at the warriors who bore down upon them. Buffalo Caller saw Jackrabbit still astride and was thankful he was not one of the fallen. He hoped the warriors would overwhelm the Texans while they paused to reload their rifles. But it quickly became evident that some had held their fire to avoid such a calamity. Buffalo Caller felt sure then that these were rangers. The Comanche charge broke up, the warriors reeling back uncertainly. The rangers immediately remounted their horses and made a charge of their own. A ranger spurred straight toward him, rifle in his hands. Buffalo Caller strung an arrow in his bow. The ranger's hat blew off, and Buffalo Caller was startled to see that his hair was red. Old dreams, long pushed aside but never forgotten, flashed in his mind like a flare of gunpowder. He knew his arrow would miss. Buffalo Caller's pony staggered. The crushing weight of the pony rolled over him, pressing him hard into the dirt. His leg was pinned. He grasped desperately for the bow that had fallen in front of him, but he could not quite reach it. He strained to pull himself forward. He felt that his medicine had soured. Helpless, he steeled himself to receive the bullet that would kill him. The ranger's black horse was wild-eyed, nostrils flaring in excitement. In the saddle, the ranger seemed to tower above Buffalo Caller like the high walls of the people's winter encampment. Numb, suddenly cold, Buffalo Caller saw that the man was young, like the warriors in the raiding party. The black horse danced nervously, threatening to run away. The ranger drew a pistol from its holster. Buffalo Caller silently spoke to his spirits, asking them to be ready to receive him, for the ranger was too close, he could not miss. Broken Leg galloped up, bow in his hand, an arrow fitted against the string. The ranger whirled. Broken Leg's arrow drove into the young Texan's leg. The ranger dropped his rifle and bent over in the saddle, losing his hold on the reins. His horse broke into a run. Instantly, Broken Leg was on the ground. He tugged at the pony's reins, but received no response. The horse was dead. Finally, Buffalo Caller was free from the weight of his dead pony.
Quickly! Up behind me before more Texans come!
Buffalo Caller retrieved his bow and shield from the ground, as well as the rifle the ranger had dropped. Broken Leg leaned down, arm extended, helping Buffalo Caller up behind him. Looking back over his shoulder, Buffalo Caller could see that the rangers and the warriors had become scattered over a broad area. The fight was winding down to a draw, neither side a clear winner. It was just as well. The stolen horses were badly scattered too, but as the warriors regrouped, they could probably recover a substantial number. The young men had had the taste of battle they had wanted, so they would be content despite losing some of their horses. Buffalo Caller was relieved to see no sign of pursuit. Several warriors had broken away from the engagement and were coming up behind. Jackrabbit was among them. The rest would probably be on their way shortly as they extricated themselves.
Broken Leg, the ranger you wounded. Did you see his hair?
For a moment, I thought I would have his scalp, but I only wounded him. It was more important that I rescue you.
His hair was red.
That I saw. I thought it was colored with clay.
I have had bad dreams about a red hair. He spoiled my medicine. He would have killed me had you not come.
Perhaps it was your medicine that brought me.
Perhaps. I'm glad you persuaded me to let you come, old friend. But for you, I would be with my grandfathers.
My medicine was good today.
If ever I see a red hair again, I hope you will be with me. His medicine is stronger than mine.
Rusty Shannon almost despaired of stopping the runaway horse. The heavy firing had frightened Alamo into a blind panic. Each stride brought excruciating pain, seeming to drive the arrow deeper into Rusty's leg. It had glanced off the bone. Blood flowed freely, warm and gummy to his fingers, as he awkwardly holstered the pistol and grasped the shaft of the arrow. He struggled in vain, trying to pull it out. The reins trailed on the ground, dropped along with the rifle when the arrow had struck. Reins could be a hazard. Looped, they could snag on a tree branch while the horse ran. If split like these, a running horse could step on them, jerk his head down, and take a hard fall. Through his pain, Rusty recognized that danger. He leaned forward, trying to grab a rein. Light-headed, he could not reach it without tumbling from the saddle. Yet he knew that at any moment, Alamo could turn a somersault. Rusty stood a strong chance of being crushed beneath him. He was aware of another horse, closing from the left. He assumed the rider was a Comanche, come to finish him off. He felt helpless to defend himself, though he drew the pistol again.
Hold on, Redhead, I'm coming!
Tanner pushed his horse up against Alamo and reached down, his bony hand grasping the reins.
Gotcha! Oh, damn it, Rusty, you're bleeding like a stuck shoat. I'll get you back to the rest of the bunch. One wants some stray Indians to catch us out here by ourselves and pick us off. Say, I'll bet that arrow hurts like hell.
Damn right it hurts.
We'll get that out as soon as we can. Me and Captain Whitfield, we're pretty good at pocket knife surgery. I seen you miss that Indian. You were so close, I don't understand how you kept from hitting him.
Alamo was faunching around too much.
Maybe you've taken a case of buck fever. You ever shoot at anybody before?
Been tempted, but I ain't done it.
Captain will want to know. Just tell him about the horse. You don't have to say nothing about buck fever.
Did you kill any Indians?
Brought down a horse. Set an Indian afoot, and it's almost as good as killing him. Except he'll be back to shoot at you another day. But if it wasn't him, it'd be another one. The world don't seem to run short of Indians. Yes, sir, we scattered us some Comanches.
But they're getting away. Looks like they still got most of their horses.
Well, me and you can't be held responsible. We're just following orders. I don't hardly know who we're working for anyway. The state of Texas or the Confederate States of America. Ain't neither one paid us lately.
Since Texas had joined the Confederacy, its affairs had descended into confusion and controversy. State officials in Austin quarreled with national officials in Richmond over the financial responsibility for protecting the frontier. Most recently, they wrangled over a new Confederate conscription law that threatened to strip the outlying settlements of the already deficient manpower needed for their defense. Texas officials resisted the law, and as yet were refusing to enforce it in the western counties. Confederate authorities in Richmond saw Indians as a distant problem easily ignored, while Yankee soldiers were pounding rifle butts against their doors.
Oh,
Rusty had no sense of time, but he was aware that the sun was going down when he managed to open his eyes. He felt a hard throbbing in his leg and a sense of severe burning.
About time you quit lazing around and woke up to your responsibilities. You going to sleep your life away?
Rusty looked down at his leg, wrapped with cloth.
What did you all do? Set me afire?
We cauterized the wound. Ain't but one way, and that's with hot steel.
He pulled his bowie knife from its sheath.
Heated this till it glowed red. Probably took all the temper out. Won't be much account from now on.
I'll buy you another if we ever get paid.
We're liable to be old and gray by then. Here's your keepsake. You may want to use it for a watch fob.
He handed Rusty an arrowhead. Rusty knew it was the one that had gone through his leg.
I don't have a watch.
Maybe you won't be a poor man all your life.
Captain Whitfield stood over Rusty, hands on his broad hips.
I hope you shot the Indian who put that arrow in you.
I didn't hardly even see him. I was trying to shoot another one, but my horse kept dodging.
I don't know that we killed any of them. We blooded them a bit and got back part of the horses they stole. Price was a little high, though, and we've got two wounded besides you. Your leg is the worst.
How bad you reckon it is?
Bad enough. We need to get you someplace where people can take proper care of you.
Monahan Farm is down yonder a ways. I'll bet they'd put him up.
Monahan? Is that Lon Monahan?
You know him?
Met him on the way up to Fort Belknap is all. Can't say I know him real well.
They're a hotbed of Unionists, him and his family. But otherwise, they're good folks.
Look around you, Tanner. This company itself is a hotbed of Unionists. Most who don't favor the Union have already left to join the Confederate Army. You're one of the few who haven't.
I wouldn't want to cause the Monahan family any trouble, Captain.
You won't add a speck to the trouble they've already got. You might even be a help to them.
The shape I'm in, I don't see how.
There's been agitation against the Monahans. Wouldn't take much to stir the hotheads into something real mean. Having a ranger staying there might calm the waters.
If it came to trouble, I don't know how much help I could be. This bad leg.
You represent the authority of the state of Texas. Most people will respect that. Those that don't, well, you might have to shoot one or two of them. Speaking of which, are you real sure you were trying to kill that Indian? There's some who flinch when it comes to actually pulling the trigger. It's no disgrace to hate having to kill. I got no use for a man who kills because he likes to do it. I'll fire him out of my company quicker than a jackrabbit can jump.
It was my horse. Kept faunching around.
Maybe your life didn't depend on it just then. But you better be sure you can do what you have to when your life does depend on it. Otherwise, you're dead.
2 days after riding south to the Monahan farm, Tanner had returned to the camp at Belknap with Lon Monahan, his son Billy, in a wagon. He walked to Rusty's tent and ducked to enter through the open flap.
Looks like you got yourself a little too close to the Indians, Rusty. Didn't anybody ever tell you that they bite?
Yeah, I guess I wasn't thinking.
Well, soon as Tanner came and told us, we sent for Preacher Webb. He's near as good at healing the body as at healing the soul.
It'll be good to see him. It's good to see you, Mr. Monahan.
Tanner gave Rusty a critical study.
You're looking mighty drawed. Worst day I ever had. I look better than you do.
Monahan nodded at his son.
Are you hurry and spread a couple blankets in the wagon, James. We'll do good to make it to the farm before dark tomorrow.
Tanner and Billy lifted Rusty into the wagon. Movement set the leg to hurting badly again. Tanner threw Rusty's saddle, blanket, and a few possibles into the wagon bed and tied Alamo on behind.
Before you get into another Indian fight, you better train this horse to mind.
It was his first time up close. Mine too.
Probably won't be the last. Now don't you linger any longer than you have to. The state ain't paying you to idle around.
Or for anything else.
Rusty reached over the sideboard to shake Tanner's hand.
You watch out some Comanche doesn't slip up on the blind side of you and cut your hair.
It'll be rough in spots, so take a grip, Rusty. The Comanche's never built any roads out here, and neither has the state.
Tanner stood with narrow shoulders slumped and watched the wagon pull away. Rusty felt a tug of regret at the parting. He had been with the company more than a year now, patrolling the line, watching for Indian sign, and seldom finding any. Yesterday's engagement was the closest he had come to being in a real fight where he could see the color of the enemy's eyes. But he had enjoyed the life, despite its lack of comforts, despite its sometimes monotonous routine, despite the slowness of pay, scanty by any standard, and irregular in arrival. He had enjoyed the bond that had grown among members of the company, riding together, camping together day after day, playing cards, occasionally racing horses. Jim and Johnny Morris had shown him how close brothers could be, though they argued about trivial matters from time to time. Rusty had grown to regard Tanner as a substitute for the brother he never had. But Tanner had family back in the East Texas Blacklands and had taken leave a couple of times to visit them. He wrote and received letters at fairly regular intervals. Rusty had received no letters, except an occasional brief message from Preacher Webb, nor had he anyone else to write a letter to. When other men talked of their families, he was achingly aware that he had none. The Monahan women met the wagon in their front yard. Geneva Monahan said nothing, but pressed the palm of her hand against her mouth, her stricken eyes telling Rusty what she was thinking. Clemmy anxiously looked over the sideboard.
My land, he looks more dead than alive. I hope you all stopped along the way now and again to let him rest.
Couldn't afford to. If Dark had caught us, we'd have had to camp a second night. Wanted to get him here to your tender mercies the fastest we could.
Let's carry him into the house. Preacher Webb ain't showed up yet. Lord knows how far Papa has to ride to find him.
Where's James?
Lon and Clemmy Monahan glanced at each other.
We ain't sure exactly. It's best that we don't know.
The conscript officers came looking for him. He had to slip away in the middle of the night. Wasn't nothing else he could do. He didn't want to go to war against the Union.
The conscript law had put many young men on the run. Some who had Unionist leanings, and some who simply did not want to be drafted into the Confederate Army. By Richmond law, it had become part of the Ranger mission to find and bring in conscript dodgers, though Whitfield's company had exerted itself but little in that direction. Many of the Rangers might have joined the fugitives had their frontier service so far not exempted them from military service.
I thought you all made up your minds to stay here no matter what.
The sons of bitches was fixing to take James away. He didn't have no choice.
I'm afraid Billy's next. He's 16, another year or so, and he'll be of age.
Oh, I don't know who wanted that stupid war in the first place. They sure didn't ask me what I thought.
In a way, I reckon they asked all of us. Texas called a vote on secession. A majority said yes.
But they didn't ask for war.
I'm afraid both camps was itching for it. I can't fault one side more than the other. But us Monahans have always stood for the Union.
In spite of it driving your son away?
Oh, he'll be back. When this war burns itself out, people will come to their senses. Most of them. As for the rest, the hell with them.
Right now, we've got a different fight on our hands. Let's quit talking and carry Rusty into the house. We'll take off the dirty wrapping and see what that limb looks like.
A small, warm hand slipped into Rusty's. Looking up, he saw Geneva's worried eyes.
Don't you fret, Rusty. We'll take care of you.
They had lit a lantern and hung it on the porch in case Webb should arrive in the night. It could as easily guide marauding Indians, but nobody mentioned the risk. Webb entered, removing his flop-brimmed old hat and pitching it against a wall. He reached the cot where Rusty lay in the cabin's kitchen. Clemmy's father, Vince Purdy, was with Webb. He looked small and wizened and tired.
We cleaned the wound the best we could and put on fresh bandaging.
Webb placed his hand on Rusty's forehead, checking for fever. He touched the bandage, but withdrew his hand without untying the knot that held it.
We'll leave well enough alone till morning. Since the Lord hasn't taken you already, maybe he's not got a place fixed for you yet.
If there is a Lord, I was looking him square in the eye. The Comanche who put the arrow in my leg was trying to put it in my heart.
God has saved you for other work.
I had my front sight leveled against another Indian. You think the Lord saved him too?
The Indians are his creatures, same as we are. Maybe he has other work for that one, too.
It's awful good to see you, Preacher.
And you. I'm glad you've managed to stay out of trouble, at least till you scrap with the Indians.
I don't suppose Isaac York has drunk himself to death yet.
No, but he's tried. You've been away more than a year. I'd hoped you'd forgotten about Isaac.
I can't forget him. Every time I think of Daddy Mike, I see Isaac York, too. I will until he dies. Or I do.
Leave him to heaven, Rusty.
Or to hell.
Rusty forced himself to look at the leg when Webb unwrapped it the next morning. It was swollen, the color running from red to blue, but at least he saw nothing to indicate the onset of gangrene. Crusting had begun along the edges where Tanner's knife had seared the wound.
What do you think, Preacher?
There are better things to do than burn it, but I suppose there was little choice out in the field. I'm afraid the burn would leave a bigger scar than the arrow would have.
A scar won't bother me much if I've still got a leg.
It'll take a while, but I think you'll heal. The main thing to worry us now is blood poisoning. About the only thing we can do on that is to pray.
Geneva stood beside the minister, hope in her eyes where there had been dark worry last night.
We'll all do that, preacher.
That should help as much as any medicine we can give him. I'm not sure Rusty knows how to pray for himself.
I'll teach him.
Rusty spent most of his time lying on the cot the first couple of days, for the pain from the wound had reached its peak, and he was too weak to want to move much. After that, he became increasingly restless, wanting to be up and doing something. The Monahan family was busy from early morning until dusk, harvesting their feed crop and picking their cotton, which would have to be hauled eastward a long way for ginning. Rusty felt guilt about requiring their attention and eating their food while performing no service in return, especially after Preacher Webb left to attend to his circuit. Once Rusty was able to sit up for long periods, he insisted that they bring him work to do. Harness he could mend, tools he could sharpen. He had constructed a crude but workable crutch from a forked branch of oak that Billy brought him. He'd shaved off the bark and padded the top so that it would not rub his arm raw. Though he moved awkwardly, the crutch enabled him to get around the house and the barn. The guilt and the feeling of uselessness left him. One day, Geneva brought him a cup of coffee at the barn where he was grinding a new edge onto a scythe.
Maybe I can get back to the company before long.
Are you in such a hurry to leave us?
No, but I feel like it's my duty to go as soon as I'm able to ride. Every day I'm gone, others have got to make up for me. The company's shorthanded.
What if you'd been killed? They'd have had to find somebody else. Let them find somebody else now.
There's another consideration besides duty. Long as I stay in the Frontier Company, the conscript officers have to leave me alone. But if I quit, they'll be coming after me. Then I'll have to fight the Union or I'll have to leave the country like James did. Either way, I couldn't stay here.
They won't take you till that leg heals. Maybe the war will be over by then.
Sounds to me like it's barely got started.
First it was James. Now we've got you and Billy to worry about. It's not fair. A bunch of old men starting a war and making the young men go and fight it.
Geneva leaned against him and touched his hand. She then turned into his arms. It was the first time he had held her. He felt warm and happy and greatly confused. He had never held a girl this way before.
Don't be in a big hurry about getting well, Rusty.
Another day, Rusty was leaning on his crutch near Alamo when Colonel Caleb Dawkins rode up, accompanied by half a dozen men. Rusty blinked in momentary disbelief, for he recognized two of them. One was Dawkins' son, Pete, who had wanted to kill Rusty the day he had encountered the thieves with the Tonkawa horses. Beside Pete was the point rider who had decided against it.
Don't you belong in the ranger camp up by Belknap?
I do.
Then why are you here?
Recuperating. Had a little run-in with some Comanches, and they came out with the best of it.
You could have chosen a better place for healing. Don't you know this place is a nest of Unionists?
They're friends of mine. Their politics don't matter to me.
They should. You are sworn to uphold the laws of the state of Texas. You should be more careful about the company you keep.
That'd be good advice for a lot of people.
We're here representing the Conscription Committee. As a ranger, I expect you to speak the truth.
I always do. Or pretty close to it.
The committee has declared James Monahan a fugitive. Have you seen him?
I haven't seen him since I came here.
Do you know where he has gone?
Someplace else is all I know. It's none of my business where he's gone.
As a representative of the law, every lawbreaker should be your business.
Rusty looked at the young men again. Pete appeared suddenly apprehensive. The other could not meet Rusty's eyes. The more Rusty considered it, the more he was convinced that the colonel did not know about the horse stealing.
I suppose if you had a lawbreaker in your midst, you'd turn him in?
Unless it was a Yankee law.
I don't suppose there's any Texas law against running off Indian horses.
Are you saying one of us steals Indian horses?
I'm just using that as an example. Everybody's got laws they don't like and don't pay attention to. Even you, I suspect.
Not I, sir. The law is the law. I abide by it, and I insist that others do the same.
Lon Monahan came in from the field, riding a barebacked mule with most of the harness still on him. He was close enough to have reached out and punched Dawkins on the nose had he intended to. He looked as if he might be considering it.
By God, Dawkins, I've ordered you off this place more than once. What do you want this time?
The same as before. We're looking for your son, James. He's been declared a deserter.
Ha! How can he desert something he never joined in the first place?
He deserted his duty.
His duty as you see it, he saw different. You're not welcome here, Dawkins, nor any of them scallywags with you. I'm telling you to leave.
When we're ready.
Dawkins looked across the field where Billy was dragging a cotton sack.
How old is that boy yonder?
Oh, he ain't barely 16. Too young for you to be taking him.
You say he's 16. I say he looks older.
He ain't. We got his birth date wrote down in our Bible.
The hand of man can make even a Bible lie. Let's go take a look at him, boys. I say he looks 18.
Monahan stepped inside the barn and immediately came out again, carrying a rifle. He aimed it at Dawkins' broad chest.
Touch my boy, and I'll kill you.
We are representatives of the conscription committee, duly appointed. You are interfering with the performance of our duties.
It ain't your duty to take an underage boy against his family's will. Now I'm giving you a chance to get, and don't be coming back.
You'll see us again.
If so, it'll be the same way I see you now, over the barrel of this gun.
I thought sure as hell you were fixing to shoot him.
I was. The Lord stayed my hand.
He'll be back.
I know. And before I let him have Billy, I will shoot him, by God. Damn that Dawkins for a hypocrite. He's out rounding up other men's sons for the army, but pays the government to keep his own at home.
Rusty appreciated the irony of the situation. While Dawkins lectured gravely about law and order, his own son was stealing Indian horses without the old man knowing it.
I'm going out and fetch Billy. He's going to have to go into hiding now, too. Rusty, as a ranger, maybe you ought not to see none of this. It might go hard with you if the authorities decide you could have stopped it and didn't.
I'm all crippled up, and my pistol is in my saddlebag where I can't get a hold of it. I couldn't stop it if I wanted to.
You better tell him you wanted to, though. You can tell him I held a gun on you if it helps any.
He swung the muzzle of the rifle around to point at Rusty for a moment, then turned it away.
Now won't be a lie. I have to see what horses I can find. Billy's got to have a good one.
Give him Alamo if you want to. He's got a lot of endurance. He just doesn't like guns much.
I don't think that'll be necessary, but I'll always be grateful that you offered.
That night, the Monahans and Rusty stood with Billy as he prepared to leave.
I just wish Preacher Webb was here. He'd know where James is so Billy could find him.
You'd best be on your way before the moon rises, Billy. You can travel many a mile before sunup.
Lon Monahan gave him a small leather pouch.
This is good Yankee money we've kept hidden away.
Maybe with luck I can bring it all back.
Don't trust only to luck. Keep talking to the Lord. We'll be praying with you.
I'll be back, Mama.
The women had tears in their eyes. Lon Monahan laid his heavy hand on Rusty's shoulder.
Remember, if anybody asks you, you tried to stop him.
I'm a poor liar.
Then don't say nothing. We'll lie for you.
The women went back into the dark kitchen, shoulders heavily burdened with sadness. Lon Monahan remained outside, stuffing his pipe. Clemmy's father leaned against the corner where the logs joined together at right angles. He kept his grief to himself, though his bony shoulders trembled. Rusty, not wanting to intrude on their mourning, hobbled out into the packed yard. He looked toward the black horizon, where the moon was just beginning to rise. Soon it would be in full brilliance. The early stars were out. It struck him that moonlight nights were the favorite time for Comanche raids. But Indians were a minor concern at the moment. A much larger and all-consuming war had taken precedence. Rusty thought he'd heard something to the west in the direction Billy had taken, but decided it was nothing. He made his way back to the dog run and found Lon Monahan with the pipe in one hand, the other hand behind his ear.
Did you hear something, Rusty?
I thought I did, but I'm not sure.
I didn't hear nothing, though half the time anymore I can't even hear thunder.
I'm going to saddle up and ride down that way. Got to be sure nothing's happened to Billy.
Rusty guessed that an hour had passed, maybe more. Clemmy came out onto the dog run several times. Last couple of times, Geneva was with her.
I've got a dreadful feeling something's happened.
She started walking westward. Geneva ran to catch her, clutching her arm.
No, Mother, no! What if something is out there? Indians, maybe.
I've got to see about Lon and Billy.
Mrs. Monahan, wait. I think I hear a horse. Lon's coming back.
Thank the Lord.
See, Mother? It wasn't anything.
Rusty began to see the shape of a horse and rider. By the time they were within 50 yards of the cabin, he could tell that this was not Lon Monahan, nor was it Billy. The horseman seemed reluctant to dismount. Rusty hobbled up closer to see his face. He recognized the horse thief who had ridden point for the Indian Ramuda.
Miss Monahan, I don't know how to tell you.
Tell him what?
Rusty grabbed him by the knee.
Damn it, man, tell him!
It wasn't none of my doing. I didn't want them to do it, but Colonel Dawkins, he said it had to be done, and he done it.
Did what?
He hung Mr. Monahan. And a boy, too. Down yonder by the river.
Clemmy's father caught her as she started to slump to the ground. Rusty turned to the young horse thief.
Wasn't there anybody who could have stopped it?
Nobody stops Colonel Dawkins. When he makes up his mind, there'd better not be anybody standing in his way.
So you didn't even try?
Well, I told him we ought to wait, that we ought to take him to the sheriff. He cussed me for a coward and said if I didn't have the stomach for it, I ought to leave and not ever come back. So I left.
We can't just leave him out there. Would you fetch in the mules and help me hitch them up to the wagon?
That's the least I can do. The name's Smith. But if we run into Colonel Dawkins, I'm leaving. I'm lighting a shuck anyway, soon as I help you bring these poor fellers in. I got no use for a country that goes around hanging people for not thinking the way they're supposed to, like all them folks over in Gainesville. I'm beholden to you for not telling the Colonel I had a hand in running off them Indian ponies. He might have hung me. He's hell for keeping the law.
The law? He just murdered a man and a boy.
Well, law and order according to his beliefs. He's got a fire and brimstone way of looking at things. But he's an honest man, after his own fashion.
He's a mad dog. Does he know what his son Pete has been up to?
God, no. Fanatic as he is, he might hang Pete, too.
God save us from zealots.
Caleb Dawkins was such a man, like Isaac York back home. Worse, perhaps, because York acted in the passion of the moment. Dawkins was cold and calculating. The next morning, Rusty traveled into town to see if the neighbors could get word to Preacher Webb. He had taken the wagon, for his leg would not yet permit him to ride a horse. Halfway, he met the sheriff and his deputy. The lawman's expression was dark and forbidding.
It's rumored this morning that somebody killed Lon Monahan.
Not just somebody. It was Caleb Dawkins. And not just Lon, but his boy Billy, too. Taken out and hung like dogs.
Ah, this stupid war. How can you be sure it was the Colonel? Did you see him?
No, but I talked to somebody who was with him. His name was Smith.
Smith? Ah, the whole country's filled up with men named Smith. Most of them are looking back to see who's coming behind them. I'll need to talk to this Smith myself. Is he still at the Monahan place?
No, he was afraid of what Dawkins might do if he stayed around. Said he was leaving and not coming back.
I wish they'd all go. Somewhere a long ways from here. Oh, it ain't likely the Colonel will admit anything. Not to where it would mean something in court.
But it was him. Smith told us so.
You didn't see the hanging yourself?
It was over with before me and Mr. Purdy got there. Everybody was gone except Smith.
Unless somebody who was there is willing to bear witness, you're hunting bear with a switch. You got no case.
As a sheriff, you're supposed to do something.
I'm not a judge. All I can do is make an arrest.
Well, as a ranger, I could do that too.
But whoever you arrested, you'd have to turn him over to the local law. And that's me. Whatever happens after that is up to the court. You know what a court will say.
So there's nothing to be done?
Someday there will be an accountant. Caleb Dawkins will stand in judgment like all of us and answer to a higher power than any Confederate court.
Oh, that's liable to be a long time in coming.
Yeah, you're young. And young people are impatient. I'm old enough to know that you gotta have patience. Those things eventually come to pass if the Almighty means them to.
Rusty clenched a fist, wishing he could hit somebody. But he realized the lawman was being realistic, walking a narrow line and looking at reality rather than what should be. Another time, under other circumstances, he might act differently. Preacher Webb arrived late in the day. Though devastated himself, he consoled the family the best he could. Rusty grieved much as he had for Daddy Mike and Mother Dora.
I don't understand. There's good people on both sides of this war, and they all say God is with them.
I'm afraid they haven't asked him. They wouldn't like his answer. I see you've put the crutch aside for a cane. Your leg must be better.
It still itches something awful, but must mean it's healing.
Then I suppose you've thought about getting back to the Ranger Company.
Soon as I can get on a horse by myself. But I hate to leave here when the Monahans have got so much to worry about. Nice words seem empty. What's needed is good killing.
Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. You were sent away from home because you talked about killing. If you talk enough about it, sooner or later you may actually do it.
I believe I'd be justified.
All the more reason to rejoin your company as soon as you can.
The service is over and the grave filled in. The visitors paid their respects to the Monahan women and children and began leaving. The sheriff and his deputy remained to the last, watching for possible trouble. There had been a worry, though slight, that Dawkins might send men to harass and throw fear into the mourners. The lawman was looking for something else, too.
I thought James Monahan might show up. I got a warrant for his arrest.
Word may not have gotten to him, Sheriff. There's no telling where he's at.
I expect there's folks here who know exactly where he's at. But I'm glad he didn't come. I'd be duty-bound to take him in.
I know how you feel.
Do you? You're a ranger. If you see him, you have the same duty to arrest him. I didn't think even the colonel would be so eaten up with hate that he'd disrupt a funeral.
He hated enough to hang two men.
The younger Monahan girls had strayed off a little way from the burial place, weeping together apart from the adults. They returned in a run, frightened.
There's some men hiding on the river.
Where?
Down yonder. One of them is on a big white horse.
Rusty limped out with the lawman. He could not see any men, but he saw the white horse the girl had mentioned, half hidden in underbrush. His first thought was that James had returned to watch from a safe distance as his father and brother were buried.
Somebody's been spying on the funeral crowd. I see Colonel Dawkins' fine hand in this. Where's your gun, Ranger?
In the house.
Good. Let it stay there. Been enough men died already.
He jerked his head as a signal to his deputy. Rusty hobbled along on the cane, trailing the two lawmen. Realizing they'd been discovered, the men on the river emerged into the open. Rusty recognized Dawkins on the white horse, flanked by two riders he had seen before. One was Dawkins' son, Pete.
I thought you had more judgment than to come here, Colonel.
I came only to observe. I did not intend to be seen.
Then you ought to rode a black horse. Got no business on this place.
I'm a citizen, free to come and go as I choose.
So were Lon Monahan and his boy.
Lon Monahan was a traitor, and his son was fleeing conscription.
You are not the court. You have no authority to hang anybody.
Can you prove I hanged anyone?
One of your men told us you did it.
As I recall, you're supposed to be a peace officer. If you've been doing your duty, all this need not have happened.
I think you'd better step back and let me attend to this.
Attend to it, then. Arrest him for murder.
You said one of my men told you. Who was he?
He said his name was Smith.
Every scalawagon rascal in the country claims his name is Smith. I have no Smith in my employ.
Clemmy and Preacher Webb came down from the family burying ground. Clemmy's father and Geneva close behind. Rusty could see the two smaller girls huddled together near the new graves.
Caleb Dawkins! If I'd seen it was you, I'd have brought a gun and put an end to your miserable life!
Colonel, it'd be better for everybody if you turn around and leave here. Now.
That I intend to do. I do not wish to fight with women and children, or old men, so long as they sit in their rocking chairs and do not make trouble. But I suggest that it would benefit the community as well as themselves if the Monahan family would load their wagons and depart this country.
This is our home, Dawkins. We built it from nothing, me and Lon, and Papa and the kids. Before we leave it, we'll see you in hell!
Ain't no rocking chairs on this place, Caleb, but there's guns. If you come into range after this, we'll shoot you on sight and by God leave you for the hogs.
Remember what they said, Sheriff. These are dangerous people.
You do well to remember it yourself.
Dawkins retreated into the dusk. He did not deign to look back, but the two men with him kept turning in the saddle, afraid. The old man eased up to the sheriff's side. He reached out stealthily, then grabbed the pistol from the lawman's holster. Before anyone could react, he pointed it at Dawkins' back. The sheriff wrested the pistol from Purdy's knotty hand.
That was a fool thing to do, Purdy.
He killed my grandson.
Clemmy put her arms around her father. The sheriff looked at the pair, anger subsiding, sympathy taking its place.
Dawkins didn't see you do that, Vince. And I'll try to forget it myself. But don't ever pull such a stunt again. Could get you killed.
It'd be worth it if I could take Dawkins with me.
Thank you, Sheriff. We appreciate you standing up for us.
I'm just trying to stay in the middle ground.
That can be the most dangerous place of all. People shoot at you from both sides.
Rusty, you're a ranger. Can't you do something?
Mother, Rusty's crippled up. Can't even ride yet.
Your mother's right. Something has got to be done. Trouble is, I don't know what I can do. If I arrested Dawkins, I'd have to turn him over to the local authorities. No local court will convict him. Not with times being like they are.
That's a sad fact, Mrs. Monahan. The court'd say that all he did was kill a unionist and the young man running away from conscription. Dawkins may be called on to pay at the pearly gates, but not in Confederate Texas.
I'm glad you stood up to Dawkins, Sheriff, but you probably made an enemy of him.
He's not liable to forget you either. Even though you're a man of the cloth, Preacher, he'll figure you taking sides.
My side was chosen for me when I saw Lon and Billy in their coffins.
After all this, Clemmy, are you sure you want to stay here?
More than ever. What's Dawkins gonna do? Hang women and children and an old man?
Well, since he's gotten away with this, I'm afraid he'll think he can get away with anything. And maybe not kill you, but he could shoot your livestock, burn you out.
He'd better not try. I'd kill him myself.
This is our home. Caleb Dawkins be damned.
I wish I'd stayed in Harris County.
Preacher Webb did not leave immediately. Rusty assumed he wanted to help the family endure its grief and begin the healing process. Webb periodically stopped whatever he was doing and looked off into the distance, as if expecting something. Rusty assumed he was watching for Caleb Dawkins to return.
Preacher, you don't need to worry. If he comes looking for trouble, I'll see that he gets it.
That's one thing that I am worried about.
Webb looked down at Rusty's leg.
You're bending it a lot better. I believe you'll be able to ride soon.
You're trying to get me away from here and back to my company, aren't you?
Just as quick as I can.
All right, we'll see. Would you please catch and saddle Alamo for me?
Alamo!
Alamo hadn't been saddled since the day of the Indian fight. He had been enjoying his freedom from work, and he made a little game of eluding Webb until the minister hemmed him in a corral corner.
Now, Alamo, don't you tempt me into language I'll have to beg forgiveness for.
Rusty held the bridle reins while Webb put the blanket and saddle on. Rusty handed Webb the cane. A sharp stab of pain told him he was rushing things a little. He managed to put the right foot into the stirrup. He removed the foot from the stirrup. That eased the pain, but didn't stop it. He felt cold sweat breaking out and shook his head.
Maybe tomorrow.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to push you.
In his concentration on trying to ride, Rusty had not noticed that Geneva had walked down to the corral. She watched, troubled. While Webb unsaddled Alamo, Rusty made his way to the fence where she stood.
You're liable to lame yourself for good pushing too fast. Are you so anxious to leave us?
No, but Preacher Webb wants me to go as soon as I'm able. He's afraid Colonel Dawkins may cause me trouble.
Looks to me like you've hurt your leg all over again.
Irritated it a little, is all. But I've got to keep trying. Can't laze around forever being a burden.
You're no burden. It's been a comfort having you here, especially after... Preacher Webb is right, though. Dawkins will hate anybody who helps us. No telling what he might do.
I doubt he'd take action against a ranger. He'd bring the state of Texas down on his head.
Not if nobody could prove he'd done it. Like we can't prove what he did to Pa and Billy.
The second and third day's effort at riding had gone better than the first, though they set the leg to throbbing again. Rusty knew he could not make the long ride up to Belknap and the ranger camp on horseback, not yet. Instead, he made himself as useful as his physical limitations allowed. Preacher Webb joined the Monahan family in the field, picking cotton, cutting feed with a scythe. Rusty kept the tools sharp. And although he felt awkward and out of place, he also helped around the kitchen so the women could remain longer at the outdoor chores he could not do. Often, Webb paused in his work and let his gaze search the western horizon. Rusty suspected he knew why. Somehow the family had sent word to James. The thought was troubling, for James's appearance would force Rusty into a painful choice.
Preacher, I'm not asking you to tell me anything you don't want to. But what can I do if James shows up? I'm supposed to arrest him, but the Monahan family took me in, and I don't want to be putting James in jail.
I didn't figure on your leg being so slow to heal. I hoped you'd be able to go back to Belknap sooner.
So you do expect James to come back?
You would, if you were him.
As fast as I could get here. But I'm not him, I'm me. So I'll keep Alamo in the pen tonight and start for Belknap first thing in the morning.
Your leg still looks angry. You think you can ride that far?
I'll make a 2-day trip of it and rest along the way.
I'll pray that James doesn't get here tonight.
No, James!
There's nothing else to do!
The prayer was in vain. Rusty had not been asleep long. After the first couple of nights on a cot in the kitchen, he had taken to sleeping in a shed to be out of the way. He laid his blankets aside and reached for his trousers. A dark figure appeared in the doorway.
Rusty, you awake?
Is it James, Preacher?
I should have known it would happen.
What's happened?
James has gone to get Caleb Dawkins.
Dawkins has it coming to him.
Violence begets more violence till there's no stopping place. I preached that to you when you wanted to kill Isaac York.
And sometimes I still wished I'd done it. Where does Clemmy stand?
She didn't try to talk him out of it. She'd like to spit on Dawkins in his coffin.
Can't say I'd blame her any.
But James won't just be a fugitive from conscription. He'll be running from a murder. Sooner or later, somebody will kill him. Vince and Geneva did their best, and so did I. But James wouldn't listen to us.
Maybe I can still find some way to stop him. Would you help saddle my horse?
What'll you do?
Try to get to Dawkins before James does.
But you wouldn't know where to find him.
Vince Purdy shuffled into the shed, shoulders back.
I know where he'll be at. I'll show you the way.
Any doubts Rusty had about taking the old man along were quickly shunted aside by the fact that he couldn't find the Dawkins place by himself, certainly not in time to help. Rusty left his cane on top of his cot. If he could ride a horse, he should not need a cane. It might just be in the way. Though only Alamo was in the pen, several other horses stood around outside the gate, waiting for their morning feed. Purdy caught one while Rusty struggled to lift his saddle onto Alamo's back. Webb helped him, then gave him a boost onto the horse's back.
The Lord ride with you, Rusty.
He'd do better to ride with James and slow him down.
Geneva was there as Rusty rode Alamo out the gate. She reached up to squeeze his hand.
James is not the only one at risk in this. You are too. Be careful, Rusty.
On an impulse too strong to resist, he leaned down and put his arms around her.
I'll be back.
If James gets there before us, I don't know what we can do.
I don't know what we'll do if we get there first. But we'll do something, even if it's wrong.